Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing, 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations, 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation, and 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today is Sunday, March 13th, 2016. Corey, how are you feeling today?
Hey, I'm great, man. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Is it sunny where you're at?
Oh, it's nice, man. Beautiful.
Same here.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, listeners, last time we did a little bit of an analysis on calls that were made. We're going to do the same thing I promised you last week. So we're expecting a call from John, and then we have a Whitney on the line, and then Love at the end. If we don't get those callers, or if we have some time in between, what we'll do is talk a little bit about a topic I've picked that Corey and I have actually hand-selected, I should say. Basically about finances and what time really is. Time is the real money. The paper is just a representation of your time. What you're doing with your time is more important than what money you're making, because you could be amplifying your expenses, could be, you know, however high they are, and you could still be amplifying your profits or your take, if you will, if you use the right techniques. So that will be our backup topic today. We're going to have our first caller, John, when he comes in. And Corey, what's your understanding of personal wealth? What does that mean to you?
Personal wealth. Well, you touched on something critical there. Time. You know, first of all, like, what is money? We use Federal Reserve notes now. That's what most people use for money. Back in the America before, what, the 30s, 1933, or before the Federal Reserve in 1914, people were mostly using gold and silver or some form of promissory note as money, which I would imagine had some collateral attached to it.
What you would have would be like a bond or an undertaking. A bond basically would say, you know, I pledge 4 cattle for this project that we're about to do together, you know, as my collateral, that I'm an honorable man and I do business honorably and you can trust me. So you have incentive to do business with me since it's our first time meeting, those types of things. And then afterwards, what you would really have commonly was a barter credit system. The people were using their own energy and credit. That makes sense.
So like their labor,
their reputation, not only their labor, but their reputation in the community was credit. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. If you know, a well-respected person needed help, the whole community helps that person on credit, knowing that that person has either the skills, the ability, the drive, or the passion to return that on multiple levels to the entire community. Otherwise, they would not be trusted, right? Comes back to trust. They would not be trusted with that position publicly. And, you know, obviously today we have a lot of public people abusing their power and abusing their positions, but there are still some good people. I really believe that the essence, like you're saying, before 1933, the essence of business has really been lost. So the meaning of personal wealth is really tied into what you're doing with your time and how are you relating with others in their time, and are you guys amplifying or maxifying each other? Maxifying is not really a word. Maximizing, I should say. Each other to the point that you can succeed instead of compete, or are you competing and both losing? You understand? That's what it means to me. I mean, do you have any specific examples of what you've really gone through to differentiate wealth from money? Because the term money can be used to be applied to anything that's popular. Like you touched on, the reserve notes are only money because everybody's using them. You know, even if the Fed were to crash tomorrow and the government were to crash, if I've said this before on a previous show, if every single person or most people kept using that and holding it at the previous value, then it's still good at that value. And then technically what you would have is, but that backs up what I said about credit, because everybody is using their own credit. You're saying, hey, you know, I've utilized this money to such a degree, or I'm so experienced at doing it that it's in my pocket. This is the prima facie evidence. It's proof that I'm good with money and I'm good with my word. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made this money, especially in a post-collapse situation. So this money is as good as my value, as good as my word. So you can exchange it between each other for goods and services. So, so it's really, again, it goes back to credit. So, and you can see that when people are pushing grocery carts full of, you know, of bills, inflated bills in other countries when the currency collapses, just to buy bread and milk from the store. It's because the value of it in the people's minds has gone down, and so they're not giving each other enough credit.
You understand? Right, it's a confidence game. It's a confidence game. So under those circumstances, like Weimar Germany and there's another country was it Rhodesia or something that had crazy hyperinflation? They were printing trillion-dollar notes, stuff like that.
Well, I imagine there's more than one country doing that. It's been engineered. You know, it's sort of like, have you ever seen 13 Ghosts? The movie 13 Ghosts?
No, I haven't.
About a house or a machine that's built and it contains some really, really nasty spirits, and the house is on a time lock and these levers just automatically come down, like, you know, once an hour or once every other hour, and so one by one they're being let out, or chaos is being brought, you know, everywhere. And I liken that to sort of this monetary grip that what you would call the cabal has on the planet, which they're rapidly losing and slipping out of their grasp, is because they've just got these timers. You know, this country goes down, and then 4 years later, this country goes down. They're long-range planning. It's all perfectly timed. So, again, I would say, yeah, multiple countries are going to have this situation that you're talking about. And the solution is the people's perception. That's really what I'm getting at. It's not the money. It's not how much money. It's not how little money per person. None of that shit matters. It's really what they are thinking of the value. You know, how much value does this really bring me? And what if they were to sit down and have a community meeting? Oh, okay, well, these pieces of paper are pretty much fucking worthless to everybody else, but if we use them between each other and establish a value, even post-collapse, then don't we have our own monetary system and we don't have to fucking print anything or waste any money, so there's no value wasted from the get-go? You basically got a free monetary system. It's the perception. You can look at it as this is the end of the world. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Or it's a new beginning.
Right. And the federal and the notes are already printed. They already have mechanisms, protections against counterfeiting and stuff like that. And even back to gold and silver or coins. You know, they're uniform. People recognize them. You know, I mean, there's been all kinds of money back in the day. As you mentioned, barter. People are probably still bartering on the planet. You know, a dozen chickens for a goat, or, you know, people were using cowrie shells as a means of currency, you know, of ways
or if you
of marking.
Get, that's right. And if you want to get medieval with it, you just talk about tally sticks.
Tally sticks?
That's where the concept of the tax first came from, is the ability to track the money. They can't tax anybody if they can't track the money, because then it's just, you know, it's outright oppression. If the people are holding the money, even before they know what a taxpayer benefits or any of that shit is, if the people are holding the money and the person in presumed authority has the power to know where the money is at any time, it's implied that that money belongs to that guy. It doesn't really belong to you. A portion of it, you know, he's just letting you keep it for a fee. And so that's why everybody's so pliant and able to be, you know, molded into that system, is because first you must know where the money is. You must know the physical currency and where it is, how much everybody must be tracked and accounted for. And then you put the mechanisms in place, which is the reporting and the filing form, so on and so forth. So what you really have is a military jurisdiction, the military war script that you've been talking about in some of our shows.
Right.
Which is just looking for
a serial number. Everything's got a serial number, so they can track the physical, tangible dollar bills. Now you hear a lot of talk about moving, you know, the cashless society, moving away from cash, and they're going like gangbusters on that, like within the past few months.
Yeah, and you know, you've got the digital currencies and stuff like that. And I'll say what I've said about everything. I still have U.S. dollars. I don't have a lot of them. I've got a balance. Like, I have silver, I've got gold, I've got U.S. dollars, I've got, you know, intangible value, stuff that I've created that I just haven't put into the public yet for, you know, for value, not necessarily profit. All these different types of things. And my goal is to balance. I want a balance of currencies. I want a balance of assets. I want a balance or range of things so that I'm always able to be fluid and move in any direction. And that's really the essence of the core of wordsmithing as well. And pretty much anything you do in life, you should be striving for balance. You only want to go inside and stop projecting outwards. Stop using spirituality or religion as a crutch, if that's what anybody has done in the past. You know, I fell victim to that before when I was much, 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 much younger, before I had some of my near-death experiences. But if you go inside, you'll know what you truly
of DNA.
The man you create, what we were talking about, personal wealth. You understand? You are the manifestation of everything. If you just go in first, you don't have to wonder where it's coming from or when it's coming. Oh, universe, please bring this to me. I'm visualizing. You know, all that stuff is great. It's a good practice, but you have to have the foundation of where it's really coming from. You are the universe. The universe is within you. It is everything. You know, the all is one or everybody's one is really thrown around and beat like a dead horse. You know, all these new agey platitudes sometimes are just misapplied. Everything is fluid, changeable, dynamic. It's all negotiable. There are always exceptions. Everybody is unique, and there is a common thread that connects everyone, but don't give it too much credit because you need to focus on yourself. The entire purpose of you in this body is for you to work on your spiritual aspects and your soul to such a degree that when you do leave the body, you can do it intentionally, consciously, and without forgetting when you come back in. God forbid you should get trapped on this fucking prison planet again with this Archon structure that's going on where they just pop souls back in. If you leave the body, listeners, if you leave the body, if you're about to die, if you're on your deathbed, I recommend to you take a psychedelic, have a family member administer it to you, do something like that, or just be ready to go with no fear, and do not walk into the light. That is a software program. Don't, if you see Jesus or, you know, your family member, Christians, I'm not denying Jesus. He was a great man. I think he was a prophet. Okay, I think he really walked the earth. But he was showing you guys a better way. And the Jesus that you'll be seeing, if you more than likely, if you follow that light, is a fake hologram. It's designed to bring you in your soul energy. It's going to wipe your memory or what it can, because there's always a thread that remains, a core of the source. And then at that point, they're going to send you back to a body where you come into a baby's body in a certain region of the world under parents that would mold or condition you in such a way that whatever your natural skills are as a soul are greatly diminished. The service to others and being of service is a big fucking thing, you know, like that people get trapped in. Yes, be of service to others. Don't be in service of others. And don't take the service to way too far. You need to be in service to yourself enough to where you're able to create sustainable solutions, to where you're not going around giving your energy. Where if you go and start giving your energy and then set the example in such a way to where the energy persists and you don't have to waste your time, you move on into something else. So again, after that long diatribe we just went into, I come back to time being the most important.
Yeah.
Understand?
Absolutely.
The personal wealth, and time, intention, yeah, consciousness, and death. It all ties together.
Yeah, I mean, what do you need? You need food, clothes, and shelter, and clean water, and air to breathe. Basically, you know, the fundamental necessities for life in the third
most people,
dimension.
Or some that just need sun.
In the third dimensional realm, typically. If you think about it, that's not, you know, animals do it, right? Humans been doing it for a long time. It's not really a big deal. You know, wealth, personal wealth. For me, it's to be able to use my time and my gifts and my imagination and to be able to create things that give me pleasure and joy, relationships with people that give me pleasure and joy, experiences, and to be able to give and receive that to other people, you know. Now,
isn't that what everybody wants?
Yeah, you know. Now, in terms of, amassing wealth or being able to control a certain amount of credit, to be able to acquire certain things, you know, that's all icing on it. It's all icing on the cake, you know. There's, you know, part of me is I could just walk the earth and have a smile for everyone I meet. And I know that everything that I need, I would get, and that I would be able and willing to give of myself everywhere I went. So part of me knows that I could do that, you know. Meanwhile, there's also, you know, now there's this property game, and right, people own property, and you know, they have stuff, and that stuff has some perceived value. And what do people?
Well,
do
what
with
you're really
stuff?
Doing is it, you touched on something, Corey. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to bring this out before I forget it. When you mentioned everything that you wanted to do and you could do, and then you come back into the property and the making wealth physically as opposed to living and being the wealth, I want to touch on the fact that one is not more important than the other necessarily in the grand scheme of things, and one is not bad and one is not good. It's necessary, again, like I say, to seek balance and seek the middle. And that's what people miss sometimes when they get polarized and they're, you know, into one, like not using money at all and treating it like it's the devil, or using money lavishly and buying gold-plated toilets and shit like that when people, you know, literally 20 feet around from them are starving. So you want to find the middle to where you're taking care of yourself and also able to manifest and multiply your life's wealth in such a way that you can leave it for your generations and the local community in lasting ways, which comes again back to trusts. So we are tying all this stuff back together. And so Buddha actually talks about the middle way, is that this is what I wanted to touch on. The middle way is the enlightened needs the mortal and the mortal needs the enlightened. What he's really saying, if you look at this, is you must have enlightened experience, but you can't strive for that all the time, which is desire. That's the desire. He's not talking about base desire. There's a little bit of that, and he mentions that, but when he says suffering and desire, what he's saying is desire is enlightenment. Because what are you all seeking? Oh, what's my purpose in life? Blah, 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 blah. Right? That's what your desire is, whether you know it or not. You're desiring to know what your purpose is in life, which is spirituality, which is enlightenment, which is reclaiming what is your inherent soul right before it was stripped from you. You understand? So then on the other opposite end of the spectrum, being immortal or suffering, having the suffering, the physical pain, the torture, so on and so forth, all that stuff. You know, you have to experience that as well, and then balance yourself out into the middle, because if you have too low, then you're always going to be on a low vibration. If you have too high, you're always going to be too high, airy-fairy, and not down to earth and practical for practical solutions for being sustainably enlightened. Does that make sense? So that actually mirrors exactly going out and being of service to others, or going out and making money on properties, like your those two examples. It's desire and suffering.
Yeah. We're here to figure out what our own value and what our gifts and what our purpose is. And a lot of what we go for in the process of doing that is some kind of misdirect, I would say. You know, happiness, that's a big one, happiness. So what makes you happy? You know, nice stuff. Well, that might make some people happy for a while. But there's more than that. You know, I think relationships can help to make us happy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and again, we're going from physical to non-physical, tangible, intangible, just like in a trust, tangible res, non-tangible res. And you're really touching on good points there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't, you know, if you can't somehow access, you know, for instance, one of my things is I'm a builder, right? I build stuff. I put stuff together, furniture and houses and art, things like that. And I work with what I've always worked with what I have had available to me in terms of tools and time, right? But if I don't have, you know, if there's certain tools that I don't have access to, well, I'm going to be limited in what I can manufacture or create. And so if it's really important for me to manufacture and create these things or these end results, and I don't have the tools to do that, I'm going to be stifled in that ability. So I get to find a way to access those tools one way or another to be able to create what I envision.
That makes perfect sense.
The,
and then
the stuff
you know,
that you
also,
need is, yeah. Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just this. You know, this for me, the only stuff that I really need is stuff that's going to allow me to create other stuff or other processes and things. You know,
that's
I don't
right.
need.
That's
I don't
time value productivity.
Yeah, I don't care about stuff per se. You know, there's a lot of stuff, old rusty metal stuff out here in the desert, and. That stuff has value to me more than something new and shiny a lot of times. My house is full of interesting-looking rusted metal objects, which I collect. You know, that stuff's valuable to me, much more so than you know some shiny plastic shit I can get at Walmart.
That's right. So, in the same way that you can alchemize trash into you know salvage recycled art and all sorts of different things, I know you're into some of that. That
right.
makes a lot of sense to me, and what you're speaking of is common, where people can find value in many things, but I'm nothing if I'm not a realist. I think anybody that knows mm-hmm. me will know that I'm extremely fucking practical. I just go straight mm-hmm. to the fucking point. I am not mm-hmm. expecting any people who are about money and really wanted to, you know, get as much money as possible to change overnight. Let's be honest, you're not going to be able to make that shift unless you really, truly, consciously want to. But there are certain things that you can start doing in your life to use money more consciously and use it as a tool as opposed to a crutch, which we've talked about some of those, balancing from just, you know, U.S. currency to other currencies, getting metal like gold and silver. Some of these are standards that, you know, in a regular investor or a person talking like this about finances would tell you to do. There is also operating on business credit. Stop using your personal credit. Stop getting yourself personally tied into things. Use business credit. Use other people's money. There's plenty of options. It doesn't matter if you've got billions of dollars. Use somebody else's money and use those other dollars to think about preserving your wealth for your generation and helping your local community. Set the example because it feels nice to have money and finances to take care of your family and your children. And if you're truly in touch with who you are, then you're going to want that for somebody else. So stop denying that it's not possible to have both and that you just have to hoard all the wealth that you need in this life until you go out and then give it to your kids. That's bullshit. Set the example for your kids to where they can make their own money and for the rest of the community's kids. So I don't expect people to make the shift, but there are practical things that could be done in little tiny baby steps. Same thing from the bottom up, Corey. You don't have any money. Get into money. Okay, so it looks like we have Whitney on the phone. Welcome, Whitney. You have a question? How can I help you?
Hey, Jordan.
Hi.
I was calling because I was listening to your little talk there about, you know, the financial system and shit. But, you know, I noticed that sometimes there's certain people that seem to be able to just manifest wealth, while there's those who just can't seem to quite ever get it going and just seem to sabotage oneself whenever they get money in their hands. So what do you feel like is really going on there?
The self-sabotage is exactly what it is. That's a really good question. I really appreciate that. It's a self-value, not feeling worthy, not feeling like it's possible. The ego is actually coming in and stopping the reality from happening. An example I would use is, and this gets a little bit crazier and fringier than your question, but it will bring it to light. There's certain people that claim the abilities that are above what you would call natural abilities, and one of those is to walk through walls, which basically is to vibrate their matter so fast that they become able to pass through it. And the thing that some of these people that are claiming this have stated is that the ego is the biggest obstacle to supernatural power. The belief that it's not possible, or the belief that it will hurt you or harm you in some way, or you'll die or get hurt from it, even if you know it's not physically possible, if you haven't done it yet, it's unknown. And so if you haven't made money yet, it's unknown. But if you truly believe and let the ego get out of the way and believe in yourself as valuable and deserving it, then it will attract itself to you. And so that's the phenomenon that you're seeing people do, whether they realize that they're doing it or not. They're attracting the connections, the right networking, the right situations, the right life circumstances, the right windfalls, which is like an unexpected event, something like that. And so, like, the people that are claiming to walk through the wall, the people that are claiming to walk through the wall, to go back to that example, they say you have to turn around first. You can't try to do it face first, because your eyes and your brain will not let you believe it's possible. But they say if you turn around and you practice for months on end, you'll sink into the wall. You understand? So if you stop looking at it as it, go ahead.
Well, this isn't safe. So if I say so, I do attract money and I do hold on to wealth, but I mean, I do attract the money, but then the money never seems to stick. It just goes away somehow,
belief. That's just a variation. It's just a variation of what I talked about, which is the belief in self-worth. It's just one of the many different ways it could show up to somebody, because it's not going to show up the same to every single person. In your example, apparently you can get it, but then it goes away.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the nature. Yeah, that's kind of the nature of money. It's really, money is like water, right? It comes in and flows. You got inflows and you got outflows. And if you're one of those people that is fortunate enough where they don't have too much problem with the inflow, well, then it's just a matter of monitoring the outflow. Maybe it's, there's two things about wealth or acquiring wealth or building wealth. There's two things you have to look at: your inflows and your outflows. For most people, the problem is on the inflow side. Not enough coming in. But for some people, there's plenty coming in, but there's also a lot going out. And so want to look at how you're using it, how you're spending it, and then, what you're putting aside. And then the other critical thing is a lot of people have good jobs or they have good skills and they're compensated for those skills, right? The time and energy that goes into performing those skills or creating those goods and then exchanging them. Well, again, back to the time value, time being the money, if you work for money, that's good. But if you have money working for you, that's better.
That's right. Corey, that's exactly right. And so that's an answer to your question is, yes, look at where your money is going, but also look at how you're valuing where it's going to and with the value of your time that you put into it, because you either have to walk into a store, you got to drive someplace, you got to get on your computer, you got to type something in, you got to search for something. So be present of your habits while you're doing that before you make the purchase, and what is really valuable to you. Is this the best way I can use my time to use my money to get what I want? Not just, is this the best way I can use my money? Because you're skipping the first step. What are you putting your money towards is important, but how are you doing it is more important. Because if you're using your time to put small little investments out there every single hour, that's much better than taking a whole chunk of money and going and buying something that's not going to produce value for you.
I get it. Like, because really your time is like your most valuable commodity. You can't ever get that back.
So that's right. That's exactly right. So take a look at that, and then take a look at it,
and you have to value
and see how it works for you, and just go from there. I need you to just analyze it and really look at yourself and how you're using it. That's you got to go in. That's what we were saying this whole show is. It's all about going in. So that's a really good question. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I think we actually have John on the line, so we're going to take him now.
Thanks, guys. I
really
appreciate it.
Yeah, good hearing from you.
Your input, Corey. That was a really good counterbalance.
Awesome. All right.
All right.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
John.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me on the show again.
No problem, man. What can we help you with?
Yeah, I was just wondering. I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking about how during your near-death experiences, how you were either like approached by something that's enticing, or you know, a white light or Jesus, like you said. Is there anything that we can do that's like, I think you mentioned psychedelics as well as a
yep.
means of experiencing that kind of stuff. I'm just wondering if there's anything else you can do to further your experience in that. Like, is meditation a good avenue to go down?
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of, and you're going to know what gels with you. It might be music or it might be drawing. It's whatever that puts you into that state where you know. Like, you know, like you could literally sit here for hours or days without eating or drinking water and do this thing or activity that you're doing because you fucking love it so much that if you cultivate that, it breeds your independence, your self-sufficiency. It breeds your confidence. All of these things are necessary so that when you leave the body, the ego doesn't take over, because it's the ego that latches on to religion. It's the ego that latches on to God as a savior. It's the ego that latches on to spiritual gurus and masters as the only truth. That is the ego. I need to be saved. I need to be protected. I need to be helped. And it's false. If you let go of the ego, which is what the psychedelics do, they bring you into a very receptive feminine state. You let go of the ego, then you're able to pass through all of those things and see the illusions for what they are, the programs, if you will, white light and all this other stuff. Which, by the way, if you do get to that point, you need to be asking qualifying questions. Being out of the body is no different than being in the body. You don't just magically fucking lose your ability to talk. That's bullshit. Okay?
Okay.
You don't lose your ability to reason. You're going to be conscious of everything. So as long as you exit consciously and you don't get looped back in, then you're going to be retaining your skills that you've learned in this body. And again, once you get out of the body, you'll have access to everything you've already known, which is why they have to run those programs to keep these powerful souls from restructuring this part of the galaxy and solar system, which has been set up and is just a big giant negative machine. You understand? With the exception of the sun.
Wow. I see.
So, yeah, we're going to talk a lot about the universe, the nature of the universe, what people would deem as extraterrestrials, encounters, the difference between government encounters and alien encounters, so on and so forth. All that stuff will be on the next show. But to fully answer your question, there is plenty you can do. The first thing I would do is find what you're passionate about. I think from our previous conversations, you're really into artwork and expressing yourself that way.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what if you dedicated intentionally every single piece of art you ever made from now on to make you as powerful as you possibly could be when you left the body, and so you don't have to deal with any of the illusion? Is that not an easy solution?
Sounds like an idea I could really fall in love with.
Have you ever heard of sigils and symbol magic? It's being used on you every single day with advertising and commercials.
Oh, I see. I have, but I've never, you know, heard of any productive or, you know, kind practices or anything like that, or practices that, you know, lead to good things. But that sounds like something I could delve into.
Well, you know, that's the first step, is just to jump in. Sometimes you just have to grab the balls and jump in the cold water. It's a shock, but you got to do it, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. And about, you know, as far as finding one's passion, you know, what do you want to do with your time? You know, what would you want to do all day long, 8-10 hours a day? You know, and even still, what would you want to talk about to someone? What could you talk about for 8 hours a day straight, nonstop? You know,
oh, man.
I would imagine
about life.
Yeah, I mean, if you could hone in on that, I would say we would get closer to our what our passion is. You know?
That's a real good way to look at it, Corey. It's exactly what I would tell you to do, John. Just think about what that thing is that you could do or say all day.
Excellent.
You know, another interesting thing is, too, as far as artwork, as far as maybe creating. I mean, the first thing is to create it. The second thing is to share it with as many people as possible. And then the third thing about, okay, monetizing it, right? So you can, you know, food, clothes, and shelter for yourself and more materials for yourself to continue to do your artwork. That kind of comes after, you know? So do it, make it, get into it, share it with as many people as you can just to share it because you love doing it so much. People will pick up on that energy. If you like it, someone else out there is going to like it. And then, you know, one opportunity is going to lead to the next, you know. And then in the practical world of commerce and marketing and stuff like that, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do around that. You know, the internet is a great way to be able to get exposure to one's art and to monetize it as well, you know. But, you know, it all starts with your passion for it and then sharing it, sharing that passion and sharing the results of your passion with people. And inevitably, that's contagious. And then all kind of stuff will come off of that. That's how I kind of look.
Yeah,
any endeavor.
Yeah. That's the ultimate validation, Corey. That's the ultimate validation. If you do what you love to do because you fucking love to do it and nobody else is telling you to do it, you don't care what anybody else thinks, and they still love it, you're on the right track. If you like sales and you're selling poison, right? You're selling poison and people love poison and they take the poison and they consent to taking it knowing it's poison. You're doing what you love.
Diet Coke.
Right? And that's a terrible example, the worst, but you know, they're obviously successful, aren't they? People obviously know it's not good for them, but they drink it, don't they?
Right.
Same way that person looks at a solution right in front of their face, turns around, runs into a wall instead of going out the open door, which is a solution. Seen it happen thousands of times. Start walking out the door, people. Please. Walk out the door. I promise you it's much better than breaking your nose on the wall of denial every single time. You are the solution. Looking outside is not going to get you what you want. You just won't. So, John, before we let you go, do you have anything to talk about as far as other passions that you might have that you could combine with artwork? Because again, when we talk about time and value, you want to be doing more than one thing, ideally. Obviously, you're going to have your primary passion, which we've identified already. But there are some other things that can support it. And in the same way that, you know, Corey says you can go market, you can go do all the business stuff that will get you the money that way. You can also go on the street and paint right in real time in front of people and put a hat down on the street and make a lot of money in the right places if you invest your time properly to find out where they are. So then you could also play music and have music recording and then amplify it. So what do you think about that? Like, is that an idea? Like an idea?
That is an idea that I've actually had before also, but, you know, it's just the whole, I also had this other idea of maybe just having a whole bunch of time-lapse videos on, you know, YouTube or whatever and selling a QR code that someone could just scan it with their phone and pull up a cool little time-lapse video for it and... You know, I feel like that's something I've never seen done before. So, I mean, something I was going to look into when the opportunity arises.
That's exactly. That's perfect detail. And, you know, that's a good idea. I was going to say, did we ID, is that the ID for your ancillary support is music? Does that work for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now we've identified two passions. Now you've got two things that will work together for you. And I think if you really delve into that, you're going to find a lot of success.
Yeah. And back to what I was saying about sharing it with people, right? So you can make your art and you can share it with people in your vicinity, your friends, your family, people in your community. You can, you know, create a show and invite people to it. But also, You know, there's 3 billion internet users on the planet. Okay, so when you start thinking about those kinds of numbers, and then you start thinking about eyeballs, which is like a sales term, a marketing term, you know, if you can get excited, if you're excited about what you're doing, and other people feel that passion in you, around you, and you're locally, and you get feedback from that, then extrapolate that out into, you know, the billions of eyeballs that could potentially see your work in another format.
That's right. Exactly.
So start local, then global. Even in your own personal life and in your own personal endeavors and your craft. It all kind of fits the same pattern, you know. Just start with you and then share it with somebody. And share it with a bunch of people. And then the more people you share it with, the more feedback you'll get.
That's right. Absolutely.
It's pretty simple.
And then the more energy.
It's the sabotage and the self-doubt. And it's all these other reasons why we ourselves convince ourselves that we're not worthy, we're not capable, somebody else is better at it than I am. Any myriad numbers of ways that we throw ourselves
I don't know
off.
How to do this yet. Oh, it's too hard to learn. I don't think I have the skills. Oh, I'm too big. I'm too small. I'm too white. I'm too black. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm too tired. Billions of
what
excuses.
What if they don't like it?
Yeah, exactly. That's a big one, Corey. Social acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if they? What are they going to think?
It's part of the control dynamic.
So, Corey, let me ask you a question. And, John, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. If you censor yourself by
doing... No one's going to hear you.
Yeah, if you censor yourself, nobody's going to hear your original expression. They're just going to see what you want them to see. And people pick up on it. They're perceptive. They're like, oh, yeah, I like that because it's popular. But, you know, I've seen it a fucking thousand times. So, you know, it is what it is. Whereas if you come out original and don't give a fuck what anybody thinks, no matter what, then you're going to come out with a winner every time because you like it and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Right. And actually, in an interesting kind of way, I've been in and out of the art world for a long time. I remember my dad, I grew up in New Jersey, and my dad moved to Manhattan in 1976. And I used to go and visit him on the weekends. And I was 9 years old. And he'd say, okay, I'll see you later. Be back before dark. And I'd be out on the street at 9 years old. And we lived in downtown. So I would just walk up to Soho, which is where all the galleries were. It was really hot from like the 50s through the 80s, I guess, and into the early 90s. And all of the, you know, I saw all... so many big artists and all the art world and all the dealers and the players and all the hoopla. And a lot of it is about when you get into the art world, a lot of it is about personality and selling yourself as much as it is about the quality of the work and everything. And I know a lot of artists, just the confidence in themselves is what gets their thing going. You know, there's a lot of artists out there that are doing really well, and I don't particularly like the work. I don't think it's very compelling. But
John, what do you think about that?
Yeah, people respond to your approach. They respond to you, and that comes through your work. And if you're like, I'm really digging myself and I'm really digging my stuff, people are going to resonate with that, irregardless of any kind of subjective, you know, level of your artwork. I think that's important. It's important for me.
Yeah, you've seen that yourself as an artist, Corey. So that just proves what I'm saying and what you're saying. It just validates it. John, what do you think? Have you experienced that? Have you seen other artists' works and just think, you know, oh my God, that's cookie cutter, or that's not really that original, you know, but look how much money they're making. Have you seen that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that. And I can tell firsthand just from seeing a person's artwork before even meeting the person, whether they are like that or not, you know, they kind of go, you know, mainstream or whatever you want to call it. They just pretty much recycle old ideas and add little bits of twists and make it their own, and which is, I guess, would be fine if it was coming from a genuine place of creativity, but you can tell that it's all for money, and they're not doing these things for the right reason.
Well, I mean, it's right for them. It's right for them.
Right.
It may not be right for you, you know. But again, you know, people resonate with that too. You know, so it's really, it's hard to say. It's a strange game. Mostly, like anything else in life, and I would be willing to say life itself is a confidence game.
I see.
If you are confident in yourself, if you know yourself and you're confident in yourself and your abilities, you're always going to get what you need and what you want. You're always going to have good relationships. You're always going to get good response to the goods and services that you put out there into the world for other folks. It's all about a confidence game. And back to what Jordan was talking about as far as the, you know, as far as the hologram, if you will, or the control dynamic that's kind of superimposed on us societally, as well as the whole reincarnation system. Well, if you can be the I am and not get caught up in a lot of all the other stuff that appears to be what it's about to be a human being or to be a member of a particular society or what have you. And if you can always go to that I am place and get your ego in check and be mindful of our tendency to separate ourselves from each other and from the universe, you know, that's that confidence game. Then you're like, I know who I am. And people resonate with that. People don't even know it. They don't even know consciously necessarily, but if you're coming from that place and you're resonating, people are going to pick up on it. And then if it's art you're doing, people are going to resonate with your art because they're resonating with you because you're resonating with yourself and you're coming from a pure place. So, you know, career paths and how I'm going to make money and blah, 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 and all that other stuff is, those are after effects in my view. You know, after effects. If you get right
That's
with
right.
yourself, everything will fall into place. That's been my experience, and I track it and I monitor it with myself because sometimes I find myself slipping into old patterns and things, and I recognize it, and I can see immediately the outcomes in my life when I'm resonating with my proper self, and when I'm kind of slipping off to the side. You know. And the longer you're around, the more practice you have at it, and then everything else.
That's right. Yeah, you've had a lot of practice, Corey, and so have I. And John, I'm sure you've had your experiences as well. We won't discount those, but it just gets better.
I'm starting to think so. Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, man. That was a wonderful question. I'm glad that we had this discussion, you know, and thank you also to our previous callers. It's very enlightening on how personal wealth can differ so much between people and what really is important to one is not important to another. But again, not to be all the same, but everybody should be striving for balance, however that shows up to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we'll do next week, actually, Corey, I think I've already spoken to you about this. Is that we're going to speak about the mechanics and the nature of the universe, how it actually physically works, how it works in the non-physical. Where are you going when you go to sleep? Where are you going when you die if you don't get trapped into the programs? What possibilities are there? And who is the originator of the physical universe in our understanding?
Mm.
Again, our opinions, listeners, you wouldn't be listening to our show unless you're interested, so just take it with a grain of salt. Some of it's factually based, and the other's just intuitive knowing. You don't have to necessarily agree with everything, and we really don't care if you do, but we do appreciate you listening. So we're going to concentrate next week on solely that. We won't be taking any callers. We're going to do a forum-style show and, you know, basically get real deep into what is really going on out there. Well, we might touch on some extraterrestrial stuff as well. Okay. All right.
Or in there. Corey,
I think. Yeah. Exactly. What's going on in there as well? Yeah. So I really appreciate your inputs and your insights this show. I think John really learned a lot from what you're telling him. You know, based on your personal experience as an artist, you guys really linked up and were able to share some good solutions. And also on the practical side, I came in with the, you know, bind these two passions together, that type of thing. And our listeners can do the same thing. You can multiply what is good for you in life. Multiply and use it to build up the other. It's all about harmonics, Corey. Coalescence, building together instead of dissonance and competing and falling apart or procrastinating or believing you're not good enough. Don't get into that lower vibration harmonic. Get into the higher one.
Yeah, I think that's kind of critical, man. Like,
the sense that something's missing, right? I don't have enough money. I'm not selling my art. People, I'm not, you know, this, that, or the other thing. Those are traps, you know? You're good. You're perfect, and you're, you know, you just have the opportunity to create what you want to create. You're not. No one is lacking anything inherently.
That's right. That's right. It's all inherent. No matter what they strip from you, it's all still there. You just have to learn to get it back. When I say they, listeners, we've already talked about this in previous. Yeah, we've already talked about previous shows. Archons, entities, things that are controlling the physical nature of this universe, and just giving us a hard time. Everything is a hologram. So it's really hard to see unless you're looking at the source, you know, the true originating energy of who you are. You can't look out. I'll say it thousands of times. You got to look in. So again, listeners, we really appreciate you. Corey, I really appreciate you. And then the callers, you guys did a fantastic job. Next week, again, we're not taking any calls. The week after, if we get enough interest, we might do that. We're going to focus solely on the nature of the universe. So this has been Piercing the Veil. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.